This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
This week in Berea has been exhausting. I don't know if you feel this way. I don't know if you pay attention to the sound coming out of Berea, but starting with the loss against the Giants, this does not feel all that different than the week after the Cowboys lost to me.
No, it really doesn't. And it's heartbreaking right now for fans because expectations early on before the season started was, is this team a caliber play or playoff caliber team again? And now looking at it at 1-2 and listening to all the sound bites, this is rough.
Well, and it's how you lose and then how do you respond to losing. So like the Dallas loss, you at least got over it because the Jacksonville win, right? It was a brutal week. You had a lot to say. People were furious at Deshaun, furious at the way the game went down because they got blown out at home. And it just felt like all that sizzle, all that excitement went away. The Jacksonville game at least paused that. And it felt like Monday. Actually, Sunday at like 4:05. It was an unpause. And so here's the thing. At least coming off the Dallas game, you didn't have what we're hearing out of Berea that honestly, it's starting to sound like things that we remember from like the Hugh Jackson era and the Pat Shermer era. And I'm not trying to, the last year, the Mike Pettine era, where it's guys, whether it's the team not being on the same page with each other, whether it's the coach not being on the same page with the player. So for instance, we already had Deshaun and several guys take on, all right, who was responsible for the fumble? Deshaun really could have buried the whole thing. There's not a gripe of him. It's just an observation. He could have buried the whole fumble thing on Sunday by going, you know what? I've got to make that handoff. He didn't. And he still sidestepped blaming it on Jerome Ford. And basically was like, well, those things kind of happen, was basically the messaging. But Deshaun could have sidestepped all of this on Sunday just by going, that's on me. I'm the quarterback. I'll get it better next time. Well, now we're on to the noise from the RPO action, the second to last drive, where they had done the dumbest play imaginable, Jameis Winston on a 3rd-and-1, where you were, oh, misdirection. No, it was Jameis Winston for like a yard plus. It wasn't even like a, it was like a yard and like a third. And he just got stuffed. Then they keep the offense out on the field. And then on fourth and one, you go for the RPO look. And it didn't hand it off. Deshaun kind of froze and got bottled up. So yesterday, Deshaun was asked about all fan criticism and whether he hears it in that play on 4th-and-1. And here's what Deshaun said.
Because other people are not in the film room, so that not everyone know exactly what the read was. That was a decoy, so that's the difference. Everyone can pause the tape and say, hey, you know, he should have thrown it here. You know, every quarterback deal with that. So if you choose one play and that's the play out of the whole game that everyone is calling, so be it. It is what it is, you know. No one's in those film rooms. No one is making those decisions. So I go based off of what is Ken Dorsey and Kevin Stefanski is saying. And, you know, on that decision, they made a good play. They got jammed up on the slant. That's what we did it. The previous time when we scored a touchdown, I did the same as that read, and I hit Jerry. So, I mean, did I see it wrong then? You know, so for me, it's just, you know, like I said before, it's just I go based off what Kevin and Ken is making those decisions and how they're grading me on that.
All right, so before we get to anything else, because we didn't really play, I think we played it in the back half of the show, but what was your reaction to how Deshaun set that up, the idea of hearing criticism and then using the 4th-and-1 play as a for instance and saying it was a decoy?
Well, I think as a pro athlete, you have to block out the noise. And when you can't block out the noise of the fans of what they're saying, that's being pretty soft right there. And if you have a play, you're fourth and one, you have an opportunity to get that first down, and you miss your read. Like, that's what he did. He called it a decoy. He missed his read. He didn't. It wasn't a decoy. And then to throw it off on the head coach and the offensive coordinator to say, hey, I'll listen to them. We'll talk in the film room. But now all of a sudden, it's the rumblings. It's the grumbling again of what the Cleveland Browns are all about year in and year out.
So what I think, and I, because it, because this, Deshaun wasn't the only one with this. Jerry Jeudy agreed with him that on the idea that, well, fans don't really know what's going on. And Amari took a shot at the media today. We're going to play some of these things for you throughout the hour. My personal message to those guys is you are barking in the wrong direction. I'm not telling you you have to love what people say. It's hard. I'm sure you got it as a player. I'm sure you got it as a broadcaster. Dude, the amount of times that people say incredibly personal things to me to try and hurt my feelings. And there are times where if I'm not in the right frame of mind, it might get through. And you know what I have to remind myself? Well, they're not my boss. They're not me. They're not my wife. They're not my kids. Okay. But you know what I don't do? Say that to them. Because it only fuels the intense fire. Listen, I'll be honest with you. I'll accept Deshaun's answer on the fourth and one decoy. Because there is a part of this that, I don't know, he could be telling the truth, but nobody bought it. And this, the one thing I will say that this highlights is, this dude could say the sky is blue and it's a beautiful day outside, and it would piss somebody off.
For sure.
The one thing that I will give to Deshaun is, and it's where I do empathize with him, there's so much vitriol for him. How could he not be affected? So it's not don't be affected, because that's impossible. You're a human. But you gain nothing from saying, well, I'm in the film rooms and the fans aren't. Whoo, man, those are the fans that you got to win over to make this thing a little bit easier. And I know it's hard; it's easier to say than it is to do, but man, that's, I would not advise that.
Well, and I go back to this too. If you're playing against the Steelers, if you're playing against the Bengals when they're going good, it's one thing. You're playing against the New York Giants, yeah, a game at home that you're supposed to win. I mean, you go back, you win Jacksonville, now you come in, you're 1-1, you're supposed to win this game. It's not like, oh, maybe you might win this game. This is a win on the schedule that you're like, you're at home, you're supposed to win this game. And now all of a sudden you open up a can of worms.
So here's the other thing. I'm glad you pointed out the Giants game, because with that being said, you can say this stuff when you win. You can. If you want to, oh, I didn't like that booing, do it when you're 5-1. Do it when you're 7-1. Do it when you're 8-4. You can't do it when you're 1-2, when everybody on the planet thinks you should be 2-1. Now here, so we played Deshaun's answer yesterday. We played a little bit in the second half of the show. I'm inclined, when somebody says, hey, here's what the play is, I'm inclined to believe them, or that he was really trying to hit Jerry over the top, I think is what he was trying to say there. I just think going after the fans is a no-win. But then Ken Dorsey spoke to the media today, and he was asked about what Watkins said about the decoy play and Akins being the decoy. And here's where it started to feel like same old Cleveland Browns.
Obviously, I don't want to get into like specifics of reads and how we're doing things, but you know, it's just, it all falls back to just our execution from top to bottom, you know, going out and executing at a better level, you know, in a situation like that, you know, and that's everybody, you know, not just Deshaun, that's all players involved, you know, right there. And I think when you look at a lot of plays, you know, you could freeze frame something and say, you know, hey, could have done this, could have done that. But in that position, in that viewpoint in which the quarterback has, you really have to trust your eyes and trust what you see and trust your progressions. And so that's something that, you know, we will look at and continue to evaluate that play, every play.
So on one hand, I think within the idea of, I don't want to comment on actions, plays, things like that. On one hand, it is an acknowledgement that Deshaun was probably a little out of pocket for saying what that play was and giving that away, because that is something that I think is verboten with Kevin. Is that, did you hear that the same way?
I did.
All right. So the other thing I heard was, you know, it's on the player to execute. It's like, listen, this is one of those scenarios where you are in a no-win situation if you're Ken Dorsey. I think open up the can of worms, though, if you go, well, I'm not going to comment on that, but it's on the quarterback's job to get that right.
Right. It goes from the top down. Ken Dorsey sends out the play. Deshaun Watson calls off the play. And then he says, hey, this is a decoy. Check down. I don't make the play. Now there's a lot of finger pointing in that locker room.
Yeah, and that's even if it's not what's actually happening.
Right.
It's what it looks like. And it's like, okay, how hard was it? I believe Nicolas Cage and the National Treasure Boys are trying to come through the bottom of the studio right now. I don't know if anybody heard that. It's definitely somebody's song. That's neither here nor there. But it is one of those things where in Berea, it's the perception, they always try and say the perception is worse than reality. And in reality, it's always been reality. It's been far worse than the perception. So while I'm here to say the last 4 years have been a nice departure from that, this reminds me of 2021. Where it was like, okay, the quarterback, because this goes back to in the preseason where Kevin and Deshaun didn't seem on the same page whether Deshaun was going to play in the final preseason game, and where Deshaun, even his other comments, didn't seem like he wanted to play. So it's like, okay, the easiest thing, you had 12 hours to script an idea of, well, I don't want to comment on this, but what I will say is we're confident in Deshaun. We think that what he saw, what he said was right. I think in this case, knowing how much fire Deshaun is under, I think you got to just agree with the player to tamp this down because he's already lit the fire. And with this answer, you pour a little gasoline on it where it need not be and paint a picture that you guys are maybe either not lockstep or you're not happy that he said what he said yesterday.
Well, I think the other difficult part, too, is you're trying to prepare as a team for an away game against the Raiders, and you're still talking about what happened last Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, in the locker room, it's we can talk about it all day on the air, but in the locker room, it's still the perception on the forefront is this is what happened this past Sunday. Can we get back on the same page? And I'm going to go back and say, because Deshaun Watson not playing in any of the preseason games, getting those reps, coming off of surgery, not getting those reps, not being at top tier right now of what we're expecting, that's kind of playing into the picture as well of being 1-2.
So I will admit, because we're talking about the Browns, we're talking about the noise coming out of Berea today, but the noise coming from my phone, I felt like such an old man in that break. Meredith is trying to do her 2020s, and I had turned up the sound of my phone to play you a Metallica song in the break, and I forgot about it, so I opened up TikTok to pass some time, and blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, I can't do that. So then I went to Facebook, clicked on stories, and somebody immediately had sound in. Guys, I felt 157 because I forgot how to turn the sound off of my freaking phone for 30 seconds.
That's what shows you that social media is not a good take by any means, especially when you're on the radio.
It's so funny, man. Like, I don't know when I became the old man. I don't know when, like, I remember giving my mom endless crap. She still calls every gaming system an Atari. I'm like 3 minutes from that if I can't figure out if I can't remember to turn off the sound of my phone like an old man.
That's a good gaming system, though. Atari? It brings back some good days.
Good is, okay, it was fun when it was there.
Oh, no, we'll go from Atari, Nintendo. Original Nintendo is by far the best.
Now you're speaking my language there. Yes. So one of the things, you know, we played Deshaun's comments on Akins being the decoy yesterday, in which part of it he says, well, the fans aren't in the room. And then we played Ken Dorsey, where he's like, I'm not going to comment on plays, but it's on the player to trust his talent, his instincts, and get it done. Basically, inferring that either Deshaun was, you know, wrong, that Akins wasn't the decoy, or that, hey, it doesn't matter what it was, Deshaun didn't get the job done. That is very old Brownsian and concerning to happen this early in the season.
Well, when you're looking at it this early in the season, yes, very disconcerting because you have your OC and Ken Dorsey not trying to elaborate, of course, right? I mean, he's saying, hey, I'm not going to elaborate on anything. But if you read between the lines, it's our player who is supposed to be a star-studded player, you know, taking the snap, didn't execute, didn't read down, didn't see an open receiver because he was a decoy. I look at this right now and I'm like, man, that could change the outcome of a game, of course. And if you look at it right now, going 1-2, you're going on the road against the Raiders. You go 1-3, we talked about it yesterday. You go 1-3, it's a tough uphill climb moving forward.
Yeah, the key to this Raiders game is it's just like the Jacksonville game. Just stop the bleeding. Just stop. Because if this is the reaction 1 week in, it's only going to get louder, man. Right? Like, fans are only going to get more frustrated, and they're going to be looking for things to get mad about if you don't put things perfectly. And honestly, that's just not Deshaun's forte. Like, he's clearly not comfortable speaking to the media, and I'm going to go ahead and say a lot of that ties back to everything he kind of went through, but we seem to vacillate between he tries to, like, be relatable, and then he says something. This is where he's in a no-win situation. He tries to be relatable, but he says one wrong thing, and that's what people focus on and get him criticism for. He says nothing or tries to be real about it, and, well, then he said the wrong thing. You know, like, there's a part of this, like, there is a part of me that feels empathetic, because that guy could come out and just say, man, I love Cleveland and I love being here and I can't wait to win a Super Bowl. And people are like, oh, you're going to win a Super Bowl? You really got to do that? You do that here? Like, it's just, there is a level of vitriol. But, you know, when we're talking about this, Real Xavier P., who's one of our big interactors on social media there, sending into at Nick Wilson, says, social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store, saying, I don't think our DMs or mentions are even close to Cleveland athletes, especially when things are not going well, especially when the media seems to have personal animosity towards some. We can ignore people. They have to deal with them. I'm not saying that you have to ignore it. It's impossible to. They're humans. I totally get that they're humans. But you don't have to engage it. And when it comes to clapping back, that's a no-win situation, because the fastest way you can get run out of town is by warring with, not the media necessarily, although it certainly didn't help Baker Mayfield, but warring with fans. You know, like, yeah, they're booing you, but they're also going to cheer you when you do well. Don't put that at odds just because it's super frustrating. I'm empathetic to you, but, like, understand this. And Amari Cooper today was being talking with the media. And we're just going to play this, and you're going to hear where Amari's criticism goes.
I mean, it's football at the end of the day. You know, some plays you're going to make, some plays you aren't going to make. I assume that's what they're getting at. Just like anybody else who has a job. Some of y'all don't ask the best questions, but hey, you don't hear me criticizing. So, yeah, I think it's just the nature of the business. I mean, obviously we get scrutinized more than you guys do. So, I mean, I think maybe, you know, maybe y'all should start asking questions in front of the camera so they can see y'all's faces. But, yeah, I just think that's just how it goes. You know, they see everything we do. We're under a microscope, so we're going to get scrutinized more and for mistakes that everybody makes. So.
Does this sound like a 1-2 team to you?
No. I mean, this is bad. I mean, they're focusing so much on the negativity side of it because they are 1-2 instead of focusing on what they have to do at hand, and that's compete against the Raiders this upcoming weekend. It's the media's job to ask questions. That's our job, is to ask you questions about how you played last weekend. And if you don't play good or up to standard or up to your par, it's not about the fans anymore. It's about you didn't play to your caliber. You guys are high caliber players. You're athletes that nobody else is good enough to be. You're in the NFL. Play like you're in the NFL.
Well, and here's the other thing. You're 1-2. Like, and I get, like, I will say, where I sympathize with these guys again, or empathize with them, the vitriol is very high.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
Hey, from fans and from some media at 1-2. So I really can't, like, this, it does seem inordinate, the amount of frustration from fans. It's not, I mean, that's kind of the situation fans and players have been put in, because this pressure's been building since 2021 with how things went down with Baker.
Right.
So it's not even just about Deshaun. It is big picture. It does involve the organization. Same time. And I actually thought, I kind of thought Amari's comments were a little funny, but it's a no-win situation. Because there's now been, every single day, there's been some piece of sound that sounds like, well, we're not the problem, you guys are the problem. That to me is more alarming than, one, I just, personally, guys, you don't win by going after fans. That's just common sense. I know it sucks. I'm not trying to sell, you don't have to like it. You don't have to eat bleep and like it, but you don't have to say, hey, this bleep that I'm eating, I don't like it. You guys should eat bleep. It just doesn't work. You win nothing by going after the fans. At the same point, the concerning thing is, good God, this is a lot of nonsense for two losses. This is a lot of finickiness, and this is a lot of, don't you know what we've accomplished for 1-2. Like, that's where it does annoy me, is you haven't played well enough and you haven't done enough in this town. I know last year was fun. Loved last year. Overall, you're not a good enough organization and you haven't succeeded enough as a locker room to put this kind of pushback up 3 weeks into the season. You just haven't.
Well, in the locker room, if you look at and listen to the players right now, it's starting to divide in some sense. 1-2, 2-1's a big difference if they win the games that they're supposed to. The scary part about this right now is, because they're focusing so much on this, it's really, really hard to play at your highest level and to play at your best every Sunday.
It does. And, it's funny. It makes me wonder, are they more distracted than they're letting on? Which makes you wonder, have they been distracted this whole time? Because if you're distracted now, again, it's 3 games. If I'm a football, listen, I'm not a football player. I can barely walk. I always take more of a global perspective of, well, you got time, right? You got time till you don't have time. 3 weeks into the season, what are we doing? Real Xavier P also saying they aren't attacking the fans, they're attacking the media. Well, I believe Deshaun said the fans aren't the ones in the room. So, sloppy wording. And by the way, the fans are the media. This isn't a one-sided thing. It's not three sides here. The fans, the media is an extension of the fans. So that's, in a way, and by the way, even if you don't think it's an extension of the fans, the media is a conduit to help express your message. And your message is, well, we don't like getting asked these questions. Cool, play better football. That's as simple as that. Hey, you don't want to get harangued about a 4th-and-1 RPO, which, by the way, again, guys, it was one play. I think the said Tillman drop was a bigger drop, but that's fine. You want to make it about the 4th-and-1 call? Fine. Same point. Play better. Like, this is not a young team. This is a highly paid team. Like, the reality in this town is, if you make a lot of money, because a lot of people out there don't make a lot of money. A lot of people out there are scratching by day to day. So when people in this town see you make a lot of money and then you come out and cry about stuff, it's just a no-win situation. Let's go to Jim. Jim, welcome to the show. Jim?
Yeah, listen, I'd like to go back in time a little bit.
Do you have a DeLorean?
Back to March and April, when the word was or going around that the Browns this year were going to be a bowl contender. Then we get into the draft, okay? And we have a second-round pick, and we go and get Michael Hall Jr., which I don't really care. I like Michael Hall. But didn't we have, like, the number one or number two defense? Was defense the number one priority that we had to take care of? I mean, we had DeJuan Jones, we had Jed Wills, and we had Jack Conklin, all on the IR or in trouble recuperating. And what did we get? We got Zach Zintner with the second pick, and he's a guard. What happened to the tackles? Now we don't have any tackles. We put Joe Petonio at tackle, who's a guard, and everybody got to agree, or I hope everybody agrees, that part of the problem with Deshaun Watson is he's not getting a lot of protection back there. And I'm not crazy about Deshaun Watson, but I realize that he's got to have time to find somebody that he can throw to. I mean, you made some comments about the administration of the Browns, and I think you may be 100% right. I want to know who's making these decisions.
Jim, we appreciate you. I'll be honest with you. I thought the Michael Hall Jr. thing made total sense because you didn't have another starting defensive tackle. You've been piecemealing that with part-time players. I don't think anybody saw it going the way where Michael had the legal issue. He's still on the commissioner's exempt list. I think we might feel different about that. And here's the other thing. You have three starting tackles on the roster. You have Conklin. You have Wills. You have Dewan. Two of the guys weren't ready for the season. Now, where I do think the bigger question is, what the hell are we doing with roster management that we've had to cut good players to keep two guys who weren't ready to play, truly ready to play, by week four? I mean, even if Conklin and Wills play this weekend, it is week four, so you've wasted three games of roster spots for one game of playing. At the same point, though, like I just keep coming back to, it doesn't have to be this hard. And it feels like a case where for the first time in a long time, the Browns are majoring in the minor again for the first time since probably 2022.
Well, and I think, you know, when we look at this from the outside, it's if you're not on the same page, if your front office is not on the same page with your coaching staff, if your coaching staff isn't on the same page as your players, this is what we're seeing right now. A team in disarray 3 weeks into the season, and we're all talking about why this is happening. We're talking about, yes, one play, but it's more than just one play. It's 3 weeks into the season where they haven't gotten on the same page. Yes, there's a MASH factory unit on the offensive line. Defensively, they haven't stepped up to what we expect. And when you go on the road, road games, we all know, we watch the NFL enough, they're very, very hard to win.
216-474-0092. Is this a lot of noise for 1-2, or do you think that damn media and fans are too hard on the players? I know that this is already a tedious story, judging from your reaction and Keith's reaction. Yesterday, J.J. Redick was asked about the Lakers' plans for a historic LeBron-Bronny Game 1 of the NBA season, and he said, we haven't decided anything, but we are trying to figure out what we want to do with it. And when I said this to you guys in the pre-show, both of you rolled your eyes.
Very fair, because this is tough. I'm looking at this. LeBron James, of course, we all can agree that he's one of the greatest basketball players of all time.
Erase a phrase. Yes.
Yes. Now we forget that. Now you bring in your son, and number one for me, should have never been drafted this year. Number two for me, played on a team out west that I will not even mention the name because I can't stand the team. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Arizona.
I'll do it. USC.
I look at that as University of South Carolina. So that's the way I'll take that.
And by the way, that's the way people in Charlotte also, right? And the Carolinas exactly. Also look at it. Yeah.
Yep, that's the way we got to look at it. But for me right now, having Bronny play with his father, awesome, right? We say that history, but he doesn't deserve to be in the NBA right now. And so for game one, we haven't even started the NBA season yet. And yes, I'm already annoyed.
So I'm fully prepared for Bronny to start with LeBron as like a ceremonial thing in game one.
Then do you bench both of them?
No, what happens is Bronny plays for 3 minutes and then we never hear from him again. He goes straight to the G League after that. Like, you can't, if you're the Lakers, and I know because everyone's going to be like, oh, he doesn't deserve it this. It's not about that. From that standpoint, if you're the Lakers and you do anything other than rip that Band-Aid off right out of the gate and then we never talk about it again, I think you open yourself up for a story that you don't need to. Like, I think if you wait to do this till game five, or if you wait to do this till, you know, game 20, I do think that it's going to be kind of a consistent questioning and a little, I don't want to say a distraction, but it is going to be something that entire locker room gets asked. That's not helping Bronny. It's sure not going to help LeBron. I say you do it right off the rip. I say you start the kid, give him 3 minutes on the court, pull him, and then we'll see him if he ever becomes a good NBA player.
I'm looking at it this way, too. How much pull does LeBron James have on this team? We know that he pulls a lot with getting veteran players over there. How much pull does he have with his son now?
Well, let me ask you, do you think that he's going to insist that they start? Because I don't think he will. I think if Bronny starts in that first game or gets in the first quarter, I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be because of LeBron. It's going to be because I think the Lakers organization realizes they want to get this historicness out of the way.
So if he starts, like you're saying, play for 3 minutes, if he doesn't start, then there's no history because it's game one. He didn't start, though. If he starts, there's history, father-son. If he doesn't start, yeah, there's a little bit of history there, father-son. But I look at it that I still don't think he should be on the team, period.
Can I tell you right now? I have this problem that I occasionally tell people things about themselves that they don't want to hear. You're going to watch every second of it. Just be honest. Be honest. You're going to watch it. The curiosity will get you if they say 5 days out, we're starting Bronny in game one. We want to embrace history. You're going to be watching it that night, aren't you?
I'll leave it up to my son.
Oh, now because you have a son, it makes it even more likely you're going to watch it because you are going to want to be able to say, we watched that historic thing. No son has ever played with their, or no dad has ever played with their son in an NBA game and started certainly game one. I just want you to admit it, just for me, just between pals.
I can't, not on air.
Oh, you know, the problem is if I see a tweet later right. that you said
there,
that,
there you go.
My favorite debate on this whole thing is, does Bronny call LeBron dad on the court? And LeBron is trying to be like, he's not going to call me dad on the court. I'm sorry, my kid has called me Nick once, like testing the waters. I'm sure they've probably done it. Your kids have done it to you too. I'm like, no, that's not my name. No, I've earned the dad thing. I changed the diapers. I put the roof over your head. I have worked my butt off. I have given love. I have given attention. I am dad. If even on the court, you're going to still call me dad. Or call me pops. Call me something like
that's
that.
I was just going to say, call me pops. Leave the dad notion out of it. I guess I'm the curiosity, like you just brought up, and I'll go ahead and say it on air. I am curious to see, does he start? I still don't like the idea. I don't like the concept of it. But assists from LeBron to his son for a dunk might be kind of cool.
I think it's going to be an attempted assist from LeBron to Bronny on like the most egregious missed three in NBA history. Just given what we saw in the G League where Bronny was like, oh my God, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly, where he's like, rain check! And he like missed it by like 10 feet. I know people, I know that the LeBron haters, I'm not saying you are, Keith is, I'm not saying that, but I do think the LeBron haters are going to scoff at this. I don't think he should. Whether he handpicked his kid on that team or not, I think it's... And listen, I can scoff at the Lakers doing this for basketball reasons. This is how it goes. This is just another feather in the cap of LeBron's legacy of being able to say he did something that Michael didn't. Whether or not... whether or not Michael had the power to do this or not, or whether or not, quite frankly, Bronny deserves it or not. I don't even care if Bronny deserves it. Go get it. I want to see it. I do. I want to see every bit of it. I'll get annoyed by the third time I see it, and it's not necessary. One time out for, I don't know, vanity's sake, I'm all in.
So if they do it for Sports Illustrated's sake, right? You know, you get that big picture of a father-son on the court at the same time. Maybe that, and then... He probably doesn't see the court again the rest of the season.
I'd be shocked. Unless they absolutely hit the skids and they're just like, all right, let the kid play, see what we can develop into.
Right.
But at that point, I don't know if Bron's going to be on the team anymore. 216-474-0092. J.J. Redick, Lakers' new head coach, says the Lakers are mulling plans for the historic first game involving LeBron and Bronny. Do you hate this? Do you love this?